It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Very conditional relationship we have.
Consequence Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I've never been this nervous in my life.
Greetings from Longtime No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series and the episodes. Of course, please do hit that subscribe button if you like what you hear, what you see. I do three new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists. And discover those new ones, too. You can do so at Spotify, Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Some of my recent guests have included Art Alexakis of Everclear, Paul Rogers, Rufus Wainwright, The Kills, Japanese House, Boy Named Banjo, Brandon Flowers of The Killers, Chris Shiflett from The Foo Fighters, Liz Phair, Sarah Silverman, Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses, Felicia Day, Susan Tedeschi, Josh Radner from How I Met Your Mother and Fleischman Is in Trouble, Kristen Hirsch from The Throwing Muses, and the filmmakers behind the Apple TV Plus series Lessons in Chemistry. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today catching up with Gavin Rosdell of Bush. The band are back with a new greatest hits. It's called Loaded, the greatest hits, 1994 to 2023. We're going to be discussing, the band's popular resurgence. We'll compare the lineups of the bands, the 90s version and the relaunch 2010s version. Hear about the new single, Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. Also, Gavin's going to consider the band's B-sides. Really, I'm going to nerd out about them. His preference for the Mouth remix from the soundtrack to American Werewolf in Paris, and why they chose to cover the Beatles' Come Together, which is also included on this new best of. We also hear his thoughts on the Las Vegas venue, The Sphere, that U2 launched a residency in, how that might challenge artists to rethink their live show, as well as news on the next Bush record, which could be done by the summer. All that and more as we dig into Loaded, the greatest hits, 1994 to 2023. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell of Bush.
Here we are again.
I think this has become our little yearly talk, our little annual conversation.
Well, there's a lot to catch up on. I don't know. We'll try and put in, what have we got, 20 minutes, an hour, 3 hours?
Yeah, it's anywhere between 20 minutes and 3 hours, wherever it lands. But it is like, I was thinking, so what we're talking about this time, you've got Bush has a new greatest hits. It's called Loaded, the greatest hits, 1994 to 2023. And there's new music on here, mostly, we're looking back at the past, but along with this and the touring, and I don't know if it's my perception, but it feels like somehow you're busier now than usual, like in the past 5-6 years. Is that perception or is that accurate? Are you really that busy? Because we've had multiple albums, even with the pandemic, and it seems like nonstop touring.
Yeah. I think that, the thing is that sometimes you work hard. I think like making things, I always liken it to like a carousel. So if you make things, so basically I've always worked really hard, But somehow in the last few years, I've just worked, it feels like we worked smarter so that everything we've done has been more focused. I have a new manager for the last 5 years or whatever. So with him, it was like I just felt I was really working hard. But there was a sense of like maybe chasing our tail a little bit and like not as, didn't have great management. So, you know, didn't really have the direction, I think, was not as focused as it is now since we came with our, with Catsys. We have like, things are so strategic because there's no wasted time and we are working hard on it. And I'm away a lot. It's really hard with my boys, but I'm spending a lot of time with them. You know what really messes up, to be honest? The one area of my life that gets screwed up and squashed and ignored is my private life. Because I'm either touring and I come home and my kids are in my, yeah, I'll be back. And I'm like, okay, great. So there's actually no time, not much time, as much time as people would normally like to have a super private life, you know. So I'm finding my way and, you know, it's okay. I'm not looking for a sympathy. I'm seeing someone great, but I don't have enough time with her.
Do you find that affects then writing? Because not having that personal time to me would seem like you're missing the moment. And you know, you can always reach for the bigger topics and you do well at those as well. But do you find that affects it in that way?
Oh, no, I have a freaking storage, an enormous warehouse full of issues and complaints that I can dip into at any point to write something. This goes on. It's just like endless toilet roll.
You're good for another few decades, even if you had, you know, right.
Yeah, just like, well, beyond my sell by date, which I'm not asking, don't write in about that, anyone. I'm not interested in knowing your idea of my sell by date. I'm very aware of my own sell by date. That's why I keep working and keep tap dancing. I don't want to get tapped on the shoulder, asked to get out of the competition, you know.
Yeah, it's time to end. Well, thankfully, you're still doing this and what a hell of a collection. And of course, what's great about this new Greatest Hits is there's sort of, for a lot of us longtime fans, there's the first half of the band and then the second half of the band after you all return. It's the first time these songs have came together. In the business sense, was that tricky? Did you already own the masters of the old stuff? Was there like De La Soul finally, you know, coming to streaming? Like there was a lot of tap dancing, to borrow your phrase there. Like, right. For someone who's had a career this long and for multiple labels, you know, what does that look like when you put this together?
Oh guys, no, that wasn't too bad at all. That was okay because we have one label that owns the catalog who we put it out with, Roundhill, and then since then we just it's been mainly been BMG and, you know, Atlantic were fine. I think about if we had any hits off that record. That's a great record, Golden State. I don't know if anything is on there from Golden State, but I hope so.
That's the people that we love and Inflatable. Yeah, Inflatable. Both of those are on there. Yeah.
So yeah, in that situation, they're more than happy to put it on a record and get prorated. You know, they're not a charitable organization. Far from it. And not Atlantic itself was a nightmare for me. Yeah, they, you know, no, you just make a deal where you say, hey, this song's going to be asleep unless we, do you want to put this song on something that's a woke record? So we made a woke record. And so, that's not an issue. That's not an issue. I left in scope of, you know, of my own, when I knew that when I did the solo record, it didn't work. Well, it had this hit record on it, excuse me, but I didn't, I wanted to go back to Bush so bad. I knew that Inscope would be like, Jimmy would be like, we don't want to do that. And I just didn't want to be one of the, you know, didn't want you to hear that I got dropped from Interscope or anything like that. So I called Jimmy up and I was like, this is the hardest conversation I've ever wanted to have. But I want to do Bush again. I know that's not what you see in me and in the label and in the future of rock music. And so I just don't want to get dropped. So which is ironic. If you think about it, if we just stayed on there and kept making the music we did and bumbled along, they'd be more than happy to have us on the label. Very happy to have us on the label. So Jimmy proves once again that no one's always right.
Definitive statements like Gavin Rossdale.
Yeah, that's the way it is. No one's always right.
And I considered that. I considered that those times in between the Bush eras, like, and, you know, because the first solo track that I remember, like Adrenaline, to me could live on this as a greatest hits, you know, like.
That was sure. We're going to do another greatest hits because there's like five songs we didn't put on there that are quite difficult. War Machine, Mad Love. And I really like those. I love those songs. It was a weird one. In fact, it's the record I was least involved in. Wanted to be my manager. One of my managers was like hounding me about the songs and the order and was really diligent with me. And for some reason, they kept being like, just do it chronologically. Do it chronologically. Don't make it, you know. And so they told me that there'll be a deluxe version, deluxe greatest hits, with the other songs on it and something else coming out. So then I said, well, as long as they're all on there, I don't think about it. So I don't even know fully what all the songs are on it. It's sort of like I didn't want to. I'm more interested, I'm looking at new music on this in my studio now. It's like, I can't help it. As a songwriter, you want to just be always forging forward. And I'm so proud of that. And in fact, doing the press on it, talking to you, I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, and did a whole week of press on it. And it's only by doing the press that I sort of began to enjoy it and get the measure of it and be like, yeah, okay, this is something to look back. It's like looking behind you, you've got a huge Mount Everest of 30 years of work and toil and this and that and of life. And I didn't want to focus on it. And it's only by actually doing the interviews. I really enjoyed the artwork. The artwork I got super into because it was new. It was new. The idea of the other songs was like my management, like just doing the chronological order should come out as the songs came out. That was my opinion about it. So it wasn't emotional, it just was the facts.
And we'll be right back right after this. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. I live in Kentucky, in the Midwest, and allergies, yeah, I suffer. When I say I suffer from allergies, I suffer from allergies. And around here, everyone I know deals with allergies to some degree. And for a long time, I thought it was just something that I would have to live with, which is a real problem for anything, but especially when you're a radio host. It affects my voice. It affects my mood. It affects everything. And I feel like I've tried all the medicines. Some of them work better than others, but there's never a perfect one out there, especially because some of them take forever to actually work and some of them don't work at all. And then there's Astapro, the fastest solution to nasal allergy symptoms. It's what I use now, and it's definitely changed my life. Astapro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. With all the pollen in the air, with all the dust around the corners of the house, even with the allergies I have from my dog, Astapro has been the nasal spray that has helped me with all of my allergies. And it can help you too. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. That's Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell.
Well, again, and for us fans, though, this is a nice, because we were on the journey with you, you know, in our own ways, you know, and as people say, soundtrack of your life.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's funny because music, I say so much of like, is inanimate. Until someone hears it, it doesn't mean anything. It needs ears for it to be something. So it's hearing it back and then considering other people's journeys to it and connections to it. And in truth, in turn, my own. You know what I mean? My own journey, you know, of this, all the songs, I was in different places. My life is in different stages, different chapters. So it speaks volumes to my own life, and it's beautiful that it speaks to other people's lives and people I've met and talked to. That's what they're saying to me. So it's kind of fun for that. And I don't know what else I could have done differently, but I could have been a bit more focused on the order of the songs or what the songs were. And my poor manager was ringing me all the time about it, saying, you really got to focus on this. I was like, you'll be fine. You do it. Chronological. But I think it's even chronological. I hope it is. Don't tell me it isn't. I thought
it was. It is. I believe everything's chronological. If it's not, it's close to it. Because, yeah, it starts, of course, with the record. Yeah, the records are in order. And it's interesting. You know, I keep coming back to that because, you know, up until the hiatus and come back and then, you know, you get The Sound of Winter, which was end up just being this great return, especially, I don't know how it felt then. In hindsight, it looks like the proof, you know, the proof that you still had something and it was real and it charted. But at the same time,
I think it's number one for 9 weeks.
Yeah, right. Like, how do you see that in the storyline? Because at the same time, like, it's a different band than what we had before. And you had different bands in between with your solo band and the other projects. And so this is a different band, but it's still Bush. How do you see it in the timeline? And does that matter as much for you? Like, what made it Bush?
Well, clearly, my voice would be the first thing I would think. And my aesthetic. You know, I was very lucky in the first incarnation to have an incredibly perfect, you know, band to play with. You know, that Nigel is an incredible guitar player. And it's funny, I watched Howard Stern rerun of Swallow the other day. And I was like, sometimes I don't like playing Swallow because it doesn't feel as heavy as the new songs we have. And I'm like, ah. But this version we did on Howard Stern was so vital and really good and not lopey, loopy, and stop. It just was really, I was like, oh God, that song's way better than I realized. So I was like, oh man, this song is much better. It kind of reinvigorated it for me. So I was lucky with that band. And then, you know, obviously with these guys, they're a really, really, really good band. And so they just elevate what I do. And, you know, songwriters, you know, it's great having a lead guitar player who kind of elevates your songs and gives you lovely parts to go with it. And does their job really well. And I've had two, I'm two for two in Bush. So I think that's a great strength. And what also is pretty good is that they're quite different approaches to guitar. So it's not like some people can replace members of bands and you want them to be exactly the same. You want them to be the same. You know, there's lots of things people do with singers. You know, I don't know, the guy in Journey who sounds like the Journey singer. You know, bands have the choice of either going. So in choosing Chris, I instinctively or intrinsically went for, had a different sound. I knew there'd be a different sound from it. But that allowed it to just kind of move with the times. And Chris has a great pedigree, orange 9mm helmet. He's like, okay, what's happening for you on your New York street scene? In fact, the latest stuff is even more. We did the Institute, the band, the side project was Institute. And that was an insight into how amazing Chris is. And now with the stuff that we do, it just plays into his wheelhouse even more. He's so versatile, but I think that's what it is. The Sound of Winter just had that, I don't know why, it just sort of feels like consistent sort of.
Yeah, and you mentioned Swallow, and I should point out, the last time I saw you, you were here in Louisville, and we met backstage, and I brought up that you weren't playing anything from Razorblade, which is probably my favorite, and I love the production on what you and Albini did, and the songs, and you played Swallow that night for the first time on the tour, and that was still one of my favorite live moments this whole year, so
it's funny how you get in your own head about songs and records, and you know, the funniest part is forever doing sets, especially at festivals that were with hits and the detuned songs. And that's really what led to me after the Black White Rainbows to be like, this is nuts. Just, you're getting so much fun out of the detuned stuff. This record is really bruised and broken person record. Now let's get your rising out of the flames and just like get your shit together. Get your shit together and fucking detune that guitar. So that's what I did, and get it going lower and lower. And now it's like, and I have this incredible lease of life on it and enjoyment. This journey that I'm on of sound, and I look down here like a widow, so I'm looking at the screen with the music on it, of stuff for new stuff, because I think that so much of our resurgence and ability to having such a great time is the consistency. We may be over touring, but it's definitely, you know, I'm already being asked, I will be being asked like for a record for early next year, for summer, you know, I know that's coming, so I'm just getting prepared, really.
The stuff that we've been talking about for the last few years, I still listen to regularly. Bullet Hose, Flowers on a Grave, you know, and the album, all the albums. I mean, you're in pretty good rotation around my house anyway. I'm glad that I don't have to pay you every single time I listen like a radio station would, or you'd pretty much take our bank account around here. But the stuff is so good. And there's the new song on here. You know, as we're talking about the past, you did include something on here with Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. What's the story behind this one?
It was first suggested by my perfect manager, one of my perfect managers, that it was a cover of a song I did. It was a 21 Pilots song I did for a show, for a Cirque du Soleil show that never came out. And the show, obviously, the pandemic hit, so it was actually really good fun. And so that was suggested as the song for the greatest hits. I was like, oh my God, what do you mean? Isn't that, it's all right, people like new music. I said, we can't have a greatest hits and a new song on there that I didn't write, you know? So that seemed weird to me. So the only way I could state my case was not by protesting and stamping my feet, was to just write a song that I felt was more indicative of I wrote and encompassed the whole 30 years. Something about it that would straddle. And all I wanted to do, and I've said it before, but I don't mind saying it again because I don't mind it's in the vernacular, that it's like in the universe, you know, there are Days of Our Lives, the Queen song. I don't know if you remember that song. And I remember as a kid singing when I first knew that the great Freddie Mercury wasn't well. He looked really skinny, like unwell skinny in the video. And that song was just, these were the days of our lives. And it just felt really, that song as a kid was one of the songs, I didn't know why, but I think the musical changes, it just really affected me. I just knew it was mournful and I didn't even know that word, but I knew it was mournful. And so when I wrote this, when I was doing a song for it, that's when I hit that music, I just felt like it did the right thing. And then I just, I ended up writing a song about my friendships and my friends over the years versus any lovers or she hurt me again, you know, boo-hoo, she's horrible, left me for, you know, whatever. It's like, so it's just one of those songs where that really, really came quick. And it was really exciting to send to my friends that I'd grown up with, my three best friends that my sort of circle. Send it to them and be like, you know, it's our song, fellas. They prefer, but you know, they're happy for me.
And we'll be right back right after this. Hey, welcome to Kyle Meredith with Consequence, where we check out some cool new things happening on the Consequence Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today I get to talk to Ann Erickson, host of our new Consequence podcast, Beyond the Boys Club.
Hey, Kyle.
And congratulations on Beyond the Boys Club. Well, what can you tell us about it?
4 years ago, I started a column published on Consequence called Beyond the Boys Club. The goal was to spotlight the women making a name for themselves in rock and metal. All these artists share their passion for music and their stories of breaking barriers as women in the music industry. This fall, we're taking the conversation further in the Beyond the Boys Club podcast. The interview series will welcome amazing female and non-binary artists from across the genre spectrum to share their stories and triumphs as they follow the beat of their own drum and shake up the scene.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait to check it out. And we should all check it out because Beyond the Boys Club arrives twice monthly on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts. Great talking with you, Anne.
Thanks, Kyle.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin Rosdell. And to say, because I think there's also a cover, like I saw Come Together and I haven't heard it, but I've heard that that's the Beatles cover, right?
Didn't write that one.
Because that one's existed for, I think maybe it leaked. I don't know where it was originally on. Yeah, I know, like I can find it on YouTube.
yeah, it sort of came out, didn't it? And then didn't come out, and it was no fanfare. And it seemed like an appropriate time to put that on there in the kind of collection stuff. It's a great version of it, because I always think this, that you should keep the vocal melody the same. People that change vocal melodies when they do covers shouldn't do covers. And that's even people in their own songs. And people, singers redo their melodies live. It's just, I don't think it's right. This is not fair. But I think it's good if you give the music something different, a little twist, something different. And Chris did a really cool kind of detuned line with it. So that's worked out good. So it was always such a crowd favorite to play, of course. And the Beatles themselves, because we follow the arrangement, the Beatles themselves never put Come Together on the first time it goes to the music. But everybody live wants to sing it. So they just start, they go, "Come," and they all go, no, they realize it's not yet. You got to wait for that. Probably should just put it on there and be a crowd favorite. Yeah, just fucking sing it. It's fine. You sing it.
I like it, though, because it almost represents, because I'm as much of a fan of what I would call your B-sides as I am the hits. You know, and because I was looking through even some of the other covers, Love Will Tear Us Apart that you've done, Landslide. Then there are the songs like Year of Danger, Ghost, Broken TV. You know, like, now that you've got a greatest hits, I always, anytime a band does this, I'm like, cool, follow that with a B-sides record. People do greatest hits. Not enough bands do B-sides records. And I've, like, Incesticide, my favorite Nirvana album. Sawdust, my favorite Killers record, because there's something about the Outcasts, you know, that play together in their own way really nicely.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea, actually, because I could do it. I could add those B-sides to the five songs that didn't make it on the greatest hits. So that's a good idea. Good teamwork.
Good teamwork.
We should talk more often.
I'll just put my name in the credit. That's all I need. That's all I need. But that also reminds me, like, because I was going to bring up, you know, Deconstructed even has its moment here on the greatest hits, of course, with that Stingray remix of Mouth. Did you ever have a preference in, because that one tied to the movie, was it American Werewolf in Paris? It was tied to that. Did you ever have a preference in that remix versus the Razorblade version as a favorite?
Yeah, I thought the Razorblade one is a bit maudlin. And I like the, I prefer the kind of more upbeat style of the remix. But it's funny because there's a sort of, I like playing this. I wonder how we'd do it on this tour. I'm confused. So if we did it on this tour, we'd have to do it like that version, because you can't do the, it has to be that. So I've got to figure that. Shoot. Yeah, another thing. Good point.
Happy to help or cause problems. I'm not sure what I'm doing right now.
Well, you're consulting for me. It's great. You're like, have you thought about this? Did you finish your eggs? Yeah.
We'll start there next. We'll take the easier stuff after this. I mean, it's a great collection. It really is. And even the songs, like, of course, its fans were always going to argue, you know, the ones that didn't make it. Like you said, The Leftovers, and I'd love to, I can't wait to see what those
are.
Well,
no, the only way that I was placated on that was I was told that there 100% will be a follow-up. So it'll be probably the same, you know, the pink cover, but in bright yellow or something. It'll be like some little twist, and then there'll be these songs. Because it's only for people... enjoy or not. You just provide it and people listen to it if they want. We haven't quite got the Apple software to give it to everyone, you know, on everyone's Spotify. Like, the minute you try and order DoorDash, the Bush Greatest Hits comes up. The B-sides, not even the B-sides, every time it Uber Eats. Bush B-sides.
U2 is still suffering for that. U2 is still, no matter what that band does, I go to a comment section like, here's a new song, because we're opening up the Sphere in Vegas, and everybody's like, and it's going to be on my iPhone. Like, you got to let the joke die, guys. It happened 10 years ago.
Wow, what a great, I look fantastic. That, I mean, I plan on going. I don't know when I'm going, but basically I will be going. I can't wait. I love that band. And it looked just insane. I just was thinking, I'm a bit confused as to how everyone's going to do after that. It could be like, you know, everyone's just sat there. It looked like this tiny, like, stick figures, and you're like, oh my God. So I'm just intrigued how it's going to play out. So every band that goes in there plays that capacity. It's arena size, and it has the most incredible shows. It's just there's an infinite number of things you could do. Just ask AI.
Well, that's it. Like to further on your point, because what the Sphere is putting into the conversation, and Taylor Swift and her latest show, you know, and that's going to be in the way people have talked about this Eras tour. Like, sure, you can still be a band that just comes out on stage and plays, and if you got great songs, everybody's going to be there to sing along. But it feels like we're in a moment of a challenge. Like, there's a challenge presented, like everybody upping their games as entertainers. From your point of view, how does that feel?
Well, from my point of view, you're talking about the real 1%, the real 4-5% of the music world. And the saddest thing that I think happens now is that because the arse has fallen out of the world so much, the business and for bands, young, up-and-coming, middle bands, it's torture. So I don't quite know how they're expected to present shows that speak to what you mean. You know, yeah, I think that, you know, like top level bands, yeah, and that's bands way bigger than we are. I mean, I can't afford to play the Sphere and keep up with what you two are doing. No, I mean, Taylor can, but not many people. I mean, really, it's the stadium crew. And are there 20 stadium acts? Are there 20, 25?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. But, you know, even considering like Stop Making Sense, you know, they got the re-release with Talking Heads. I mean, that didn't need a stadium. He walked out with a boombox and set it down, and they figured out how to put on a great show. And it built on that, and there was lots of stuff, but it definitely wasn't a stadium show.
Yeah, I mean, you mean the theatricality is, you know, is in, and yeah, it's sort of exhausting, especially if you're the songwriter, because it's like that used to be enough to be an exciting band, have great songs, is decent light. I remember being when we toured with the Jesus Lizard. And we took them. Oh no, and Shellac do it too. All those bands, Shellac, Jesus Lizard, Fugazi, all those great bands that the kids don't really know about. That was all in white light. Nothing changed. Like really subversive. No, it's just this. And that was kind of refreshing. So whenever we go extremely high theater, it's then really beautiful to come in and go really, really simple. But I mean, ultimately, it's good news for the audience if people are considering ways to be as creative as possible to present their shows. Exhausting if you're like me and you're like, oh, I do have a good stage design guy that we just worked with on the last tour, so it would be his problem and I disagree or not agree. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, being creative is good, isn't it? You know, interesting ways of doing things is good. The hip-hop world, all the sort of one, whether it was Kanye, you know, that one person, lone person on the stage was kind of a new thing. And so it's always evolving, always changing. And then, yeah, for me, shows should be looked at. How do I keep the audience mesmerized from start to finish? And whatever that takes is whatever you should do within your budget.
Well, again, the songs hold true. And I did like your stage design on this last tour. That was noticeable. The lights look great.
We never done that sort of production. We never been that fancy. It was always like, all right, Bob, like, try and put the light on me. I'll be here, right? Just get it right. Not too rock, not too traditional. Okay.
Because I know you and I both are big fans of the Bowie. The guy figured out how to do it. I mean, holding your attention, whether it was big or small.
Yeah, no, glass spiders. That was the wrong turn, I would say. That was too much. I was like, I didn't want
and to sometimes look. We go too much. Yeah, right. But he was coming off Labyrinth, so in hindsight, it made sense.
And then when he'd step on stage with his band and just singing and playing, that was enough for me. I was like, oh my God, this is enough for me. He's so incredible. God. It's funny because I'm quite friendly with Mike Garson. And so I had lunch with him last week. And just fun sitting, talking with someone that toured and lived with him and knew him so intimately since the 70s. Yeah. So missed, you know, such a great person. I don't think I was a massively great friend of his, but I was definitely could contact him and reach out and chat with him and stuff like that. And yeah, it's annoying when people die. It's really selfish. They're gone and you can never ring them ever again.
there are a handful of artists. Like, I listen to Bowie at least every week. I listen to Tom Waits every week. You know, I probably listen to Dylan. You know,
he's all right. Tom Waits is all right.
Sure, he hasn't put out a record in over 10 years now. And that's my selfishness. Like, and that's the question. Why do I need a new Tom Waits record? I want one. I want a new Bush record. Why do I need a new Bush record? But I do.
Because it's so fun when you like someone's perspective. And that's what liking a band is. It's like liking their perspective sonically and lyrically, whatever the turns you on about them. And it's like having another conversation with them. And, you know, I would love another Bowie record. I would love another Deftones record. I would love, Prince record, wish I could see a Prince record. Who wouldn't have loved another Nirvana record? I mean, that's the big hole in most people's lives. Yeah, so it's just life is harsh. I remember being at an event once in New York. I was singing for a food bank charity in New York. I saw Mike Mills and the crowd, and they'd just broken up. And I went down, I was on there, and I was like, and then Mike's here, and I went, but Mike, are you sure? We can't. What are we going to do? And he goes, you'll be fine. He heckled me. You'll be fine.
Yeah, because REM, they might be, I mean, I say all these bands. REM's just another one of those bands I listen to all the time. What is so annoying, though, about them, and I'm going to be talking with both Stipe and Mills again here in a couple weeks about the anniversary of Up, but it's that Peter Buck and Mike Mills still play together in the Baseball Project. They still play together in a band together, and they play little clubs, and all we're missing is one guy who's also working on a solo record. Like, guys, that's just mean. That's what that is.
Stipe working on a solo record.
Yeah, he's put out a couple of the tracks in the past couple of years, and he says the record's almost done. There's a solo album.
I haven't seen him in a while. I did. I got friendly with him at one point when I'd go to New York a few times, and we had a great friend in common. And I hung out and got to hang out with him a little bit more than normal, coffees, and I think we had lunch. He's so serious. He's so very serious, man. And he's amazing. He's mainly doing his sculpture, right? It's his biggest thing. I haven't seen that either. I'd love one of his sculptures. He's lovely. He's a very, very nice man.
Still does a lot of photography, still does a lot of sculpting, but has been making music. So at least if it's not REM, they're all still doing music. It's just under something else. With all that said, I'm excited that there's going to be another Bush record, because you're always working on one, and you've mentioned that for a possibility next year.
So good. I know the
Bring it on. In the meantime, Loaded, the Greatest Hits, is such a fun album. I'm enjoying this new song, Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. Gavin, I love talking to you, man. Thank you again for hanging out with me.
Yeah, all the best. Cheers.
And my thanks to Gavin. The new Bush Best Of compilation is called Loaded, the Greatest Hits, 1994 to 2023. You can, of course, dig deeper into this podcast series to find all of my interviews with Gavin Rosdell. We've done plenty of them over the past few years. Big old thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out. 3 new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artist and discover those new ones. Again, you can do so any of the usual spots. That does include Spotify and Apple Podcast at NPR, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of some of my favorites from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. There's great new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows, I featured the music of Lou Reed, Oasis, Blur, David Bowie, The Human League, The Beastie Boys, Budos Band, Thievery Corporation, Ricky Lee Jones, Bob Dylan, John Prine, Churches, Genesis Owusu, Patti Smith, Wilco, Dave Matthews Band, Patti Griffin, Lone Justice, Pink Floyd, Florence and the Machine, and my interview with Michael C. Hall. You'll know him from Dexter or 6 Feet Under. He stopped by with his band Princess Goes to talk about their new record. Just an example of what you hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news.
You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same, at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I got to keep making music. I mean, hang on.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.